The first time they played together, they didn't even have time to run through all the pieces. They just had to go on stage and hope for the best. And everything clicked so well, they decided to put out a recording together. They are Damari McGill, Anthony McGill, and Michael McHale. And their new recording is called Portraits. This is the extended version of New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Almacher. So, Anthony and Damari, you seem to be a pretty good example of sibling harmony. Has it always been that way for you?
Actually, you know what? Someone wrote a piece for us called Sibling Rivalry years ago.
Who wrote that piece?
Yeah, we do. We didn't really have much of a sibling rivalry, actually, because I was 4 years younger than my brother, and those 4 years were very large 4 years, especially when you're younger. So, more like I had a older brother who was also my first clarinet teacher, even though he played the flute.
Okay, now wait a minute. Now I'm confused. So who's the older one?
Damari's the older one. This is Anthony talking.
Okay. Yeah. All right, thank you. So tell me a little bit about that. How is it that the two of you have both become professional musicians?
We worked really hard. I think if there's anything that can come of growing up in the same house, as Anthony said, I am the older one, and he basically grew up listening to me practice a lot. But inspiration helps a lot, and there wasn't any shortage of that growing up. I guess initially with me playing an instrument first, and then as we got older and Anthony started to experience his many successes on my end, just being inspired by him, that's an important ingredient to growth, and it's one of many things paired with having supportive parents, supportive music teachers, going to good schools. It's a complex combination.
Well, what I'm curious about was, how did classical music become your inspiration? Was this something that was just, you know, you grew up hearing it with your family? Or tell me a little bit about that. How did that become rooted as your goal professionally?
Well, whenever you study an instrument, generally from the start, generally you play the genre that your teachers play. And so when you start an instrument at school and playing band, unless you're specifically wanting to get into the jazz band from a very early age, you know, you study. All of our teachers were classical musicians generally. So, except for my first teacher, who was a jazz saxophone player, but he was still teaching me how to play the clarinet classically, I suppose, you know, out of the band, early band books and elementary methods. They're, you know, just, you're just learning music at that point, quarter notes, eighth notes, you know. So the genres come in much later as far as what you do with the instrument. So I think that's kind of how it happened. And our mother was a choreographer and singer and dancer, so she also was familiar with classical music from her time as a modern dancer and choreographer. So that I think that probably steered us into that direction as well.
And I mean, in the home, our parents played everything. I mean, we heard a lot of great music. I can't say that it was, I mean, it definitely wasn't all classical at all. It was very little classical, but it's what I would still consider great music. And you know, I credit everything that we listened to as children to sort of shaping the musical ear that I have now. You know,
while we're talking about your teachers, tell me about perhaps a teacher who did inspire you, because a lot of us start out taking music lessons at probably, oh, the age of, you know, somewhere around 8, 9, or 10, but not everybody sticks with it. So I'm guessing something happened along the way that inspired you enough to keep going.
Well, there were a couple of people. I mean, there's actually in Chicago, there are more than a couple of people that steered us in the right direction, that inspired us, that motivated us. Just in the interest of time, Barry Elmore, a band teacher at the elementary school that we both attended, and he was a very influential figure in our lives, not just in our lives, for a lot of people who happened to go to the Edgar Allan Poe Classical School in Chicago. my individual teacher, my personal teacher, was Susan Levitin, a wonderful flute teacher in Chicago who, once again, not only positively influenced my musical life, but I can't imagine the number of flutists who would credit her with changing their life trajectory, whether or not they actually ultimately had careers in music. You know, that we both attended the Merritt School of Music in Chicago, which is a wonderful program, which was and still is a fantastic program in the Chicago area. So, yeah, I'm eternally grateful to those institutions and those teachers that I was lucky enough to spend time with.
Michael, now, how did you become part of this trio? How did you end up encountering Anthony and Damari?
Well, it was actually our manager that got us together, because I've been doing some stuff over the years over in the US, and she's kind of helped me out fixing up solo dates. And she has also represented Anthony and Damari since they were quite young, I think. So she suggests, she just kind of thought from our personalities, maybe these guys might have some fun playing music together. And she suggested it to all of us, and we all thought, yeah, sure, let's give it a go. So we all arrived in Bowling Green University for a residency. We flew in from three different cities, Dallas, New York, and London. I'd never met either Anthony or Damari before. And it was a bit of a whirlwind. We had, you know, various different classes with the students there, and we fitted in about an hour rehearsal. We didn't even get through all of the music that we were going to perform in the concert because there wasn't time. So when we walked on stage, some of the stuff we were playing together, we hadn't even played through once. And yet it all worked. It was just amazing how it just clicked. And so I guess we all really enjoyed that experience, and the fact that it felt so natural, we thought let's keep working together.
So the three of you, each of you have really busy professional careers. How were you able to manage to carve out the time to make this debut recording called Portraits?
Yeah, well, I think we kind of had to be quite clever about our schedules in that regard. So we basically zone in on little patches throughout the year where our schedules align. And in terms of the recording, we managed to fit in a few performances of the repertoire that was going to be on the album in the few weeks before the sessions in Chicago last December. And I think that really helped because we were able to kind of grow into our interpretations of the music and really work out, you know, on stage, you know, what works, what feels good. And, you know, that then I think really benefited us when we got into the studio.
So what inspired the three of you to create this program of living composers on your debut release?
Well, I think it was a number of things. Some of the pieces we knew or had heard of, and it was a strange process trying to put this program together when we live in three different cities. And we kind of just objectively tried to find pieces that would work. So, you know, we would go on, like everyone else, when you're trying to discover new work for an instrument. I personally went on Google and searched for flute clarinet music, right? And then, at other times, a work was recommended to me. I think, I'm not sure if my brother heard this, the Portraits at the flute convention, but it was recommended to me through a clarinetist that had performed it, Michael Webster, and he has a trio with his wife, Leon Bicey. A similar trio, the same instrumentation, actually. And he said it was a great work. We were emailing about something, and he said, you know, you should really look this up. I think it's something that would really speak to you. And I did. I heard it online, and it was awesome. And I think a couple of the other works were suggested by these other guys, and we just said, sure, that sounds great. We all just did research online, listened to it, and said, okay, that would work.
So, no. Anthony, you brought up Portraits, which is Portraits of Langston by Valerie Coleman, who also is a flutist with the Imani Winds. This became the heart of this program. Let's talk about this piece, which is made up of 12 different pieces. There are some musical interludes, and then there's some of his poetry is in there, Langston Hughes poetry. Who would like to talk a little bit about the individual works in this piece?
Well, This is Damari. The Portraits of Langston is a wonderful work that uses texts from Langston Hughes' works, as well as one movement that is simply inspired by Langston Hughes. And Valerie did a really tremendous, tremendous job creating a work which is unbelievably diverse in the moods that the individual movements portray. From wonderfully, most haunting, passionate movement, Silver Rain, to the final movement, which is an absolutely gorgeous, gorgeous melody. And contrast that with the really, really vibrant movement just for the flute and clarinet.
I think maybe you were just referring to Le Grand Duke Mambo that showcases the flute and clarinet and syncopation. Great story behind that that was inspired by an experience that Hughes had as a busboy working for 25 cents a night in a jazz cabaret club in the Red Light District. There was another movement in here that I made a note about. I think Dance African. The three of you really, really get a chance to explore some different rhythms in that one.
Oh, that's a really cool piece. She does a great job of kind of mimicking the sounds of the djembe, I guess, the drum, you know, on the clarinet. She does makes this awesome sound with just the way she writes it in the music, and it really sounds like somebody's drumming and strumming that kind of specific musical drum. And throughout the colors that she has, you can feel that you're in there dancing along with this amazing, amazing sounding dance. And just the rhythms that she uses in the piano. You mentioned syncopation. You have these different eighth notes going against each other and accents and kind of articulations from all of the instruments that make it kind of spike at certain places. It's pretty awesome colors that she captures from these instruments.
We're also really grateful to Mahershala Ali for narrating these poems and texts so beautifully on the album.
A night-veiled girl whirls softly into a circle of light. Whirls softly, slowly, like a wisp of smoke around the fire. And the tom-toms beat, and the tom-toms beat, and the low beating of the tom-toms stirs your blood.
And I think it really just kind of brings the music to another level to have those side by side. So we were really excited that he came on board to do that for us.
Yeah, it really does enhance the piece as well.
I would say that we loved it at the beginning, but after performing it a few times, realize how golden and special this work really, really is. And so it was a no-brainer to have this be the focal point of the recording.
I was curious, Damari, if there is something within this piece that gives us a hint that a flutist wrote it. Is there something in the piece that kind of identifies the fact that indeed someone who knows your instrument is the person who composed the piece?
That's a very good question, and I would say no. She writes so beautifully for all three instruments that that it really transcends the fact that she herself is actually a flutist. And I think that's one of the things that makes this work so great. If I were to actually say, yes, this is absolutely, it's a wonderful piece, but it was written by a flutist, obviously, I think it would be a lesser work.
So, Anthony, you premiered a clarinet concerto in 2016 by Chris Rogerson, and then you asked him to reorchestrate A Fish Will Rise featuring flute, clarinet, and piano. Why did you want to play this piece? What was so special about it that made you want to have this work in this arrangement for this trio?
I heard Chris's music probably at the beginning of 2016 when a conductor friend of mine that I've known for many, many years suggested that I listen to his music because he was the composer in residence there in Amarillo, at the Amarillo Symphony. And I heard his music and I fell in love with it, especially because of his connection and his sound that is quite similar at times to Aaron Copland. And of course, Copland wrote the famous clarinet concerto. And the colors that he uses in his music, I related to. I was like, oh, that would be, whatever he writes for clarinet, it's going to be great. So I heard his clarinet sonata, and I fell in love with it immediately. It's a great piece. And he did an arrangement for clarinet and orchestra of the sonata, and it also worked so well. I was like, this guy has not just a gift for the new pieces he writes, but he can also arrange these things and orchestrate so well. So when I heard this piece of Fish Will Rise, and he thought it would work really well, and I thought it would work beautifully, little did I know that I would like it so much that we would use it on the recording. And Chris is a great guy, a young composer. I think he's one of these composers that's like the future of our field. And I was really happy that he was able to do this arrangement for us.
Now, the title comes from Norman MacLean's memoir, A River Runs Through It. Are you familiar with that memoir? Have you had a chance to read it?
No, I think I've seen the movie, right? There's like a movie that's based upon it, right?
Yeah, with Brad Pitt.
Yeah, exactly. So, but there's also a personal story. You'll have to get Chris on the radio to talk about that. Has to do with a fishing trip that he went on, actually. And it involved his family and his sister and stuff. And he told me the story. I can't remember it now. But that piece has a personal connection to Chris that is very special. And it's a beautiful piece.
Now, I read in here that your hope is that we, the listeners, will engage fully with this music to hear with all of our senses. How do we hear with all of our senses?
Well, I guess that comes back to what we were talking about Valerie's piece about, you know, like particularly in her music and in some of the other pieces like the Techno Parade by Guillaume Connaissant. There's a lot of this music on this album particularly gets into a groove, I feel, and it really kind of gets under your skin. And I guess that's really what we're talking about there, I guess, that music is something you feel through your whole body, not just through your ears. And I feel with the program and the combination of pieces that we've put together here, it really kind of draws attention to that.
Well, Michael, there are a few of your arrangements on this recording. Let's talk about those. The Rachmaninoff Vocalis. The melody is alternating between the flute and the clarinet. Is there anything particularly challenging about the way this is written? I guess this would be a question more for Anthony and Damari, since they're the ones sharing the melody.
Well, I guess, you know, from my point of view in terms of arranging it, I felt that I could really kind of do whatever would work best musically, how to redistribute, because Rachmaninoff writes so many of these beautiful counter melodies as well as the melody itself, that it's perfect really for rearrangement. It's ripe for it, because there are all these alternate counter melodies in the piano part that I was able to occasionally distribute to one or other of the wind instruments. And as an arranger, I felt I could really push the boat out, push some lines into registers that aren't always comfortable, but because I know that the guys who are going to be playing it are top-class musicians, that they will make it feel natural, and they really did that in spades.
Tell me about the lamentation of Owen O'Neill. This is a work that you premiered with Sir James and Lady Jean Galway originally.
Yes, that's right. It's by a Belfast composer. So I'm from Belfast, Northern Ireland, and Philip Hammond, the composer of this piece, comes from there as well. And I've known him and played his music since I was a teenager. And yeah, he's written a lot of music for me, like a piano concerto, which I did a couple of years ago, and the piece with the Galways. And I remembered when we were looking for new repertoire for this new trio, I remembered that piece about how well it worked, and the second flute part, particularly later on, doubles the first flute in octaves, and I thought, you know, that would sound great with the flute and the clarinet. So I wrote to Philip, a little like Anthony did with Chris Rogerson. I got in touch and said, you know, is this something you'd be able to do to potentially rearrange this piece for this new ensemble? And luckily he was delighted to do that, and I feel it works really well. It's very beautifully simple and inspired by an old Irish melody.
Paul Schoenfeld's Sonatina for Flute, Clarinet, and Piano is on this recording, and he has commented that his music is not the kind to relax to, but the kind that makes people sweat, both the performer and the audience. Do you find that to be true?
I would say so. I would never call it particularly easy music to play, to put together, but it's absolutely worth it. I was so excited to hear that he had a work for the flute, clarinet, piano combination. It's inspired by a few different dances, and we felt that it would work well on this CD simply because of that, because as tricky as it is, there's a wonderful groove. It's always very satisfying to put something together that is initially maybe a little tricky, but ultimately incredible. It's a wonderful piece of music.
Yeah, I think that piece is awesome. You know, I didn't know the piece actually before we started working on it, and it's really hard. It's very challenging. Really difficult to put together, but once you do, I mean, it has such a crazy feel.
Now, we haven't yet said anything about Techno Parade. Would any of you care to say anything about that piece?
When we were touring the piece before the recording, we talked to audiences before, and we had to explain to a few people what techno music was. you know, it's like this electronic kind of rock beat. And so they kind of got it. And you can feel that as well when you're listening to it, this constant, fast, extremely fast beat. And Michael can possibly speak to some of the extended techniques that are used on the piano that are really, really awesome and make the piece have this kind of electro techno sound.
Yeah, he uses various techniques. At the very start of the piece, I have to dampen with my right hand some of the low bass strings and then play the keys with my left hand, so it kind of has this dull thudding sound, which really kind of gives the beat that bit more energy and strength. Then later in the piece, there is this fantastic section where I have to put a sheaf of A4 paper on top of the strings in the middle of the piano. And with my right hand, I have to scrub the strings with a brush and play the notes, the alternating notes in the left hand. And so the paper gives it this really kind of metallic, crazy effect. And then that combined with the brush scrubbing the strings, it's an incredible effect. When we've played it live, there's that kind of element of theatre as well, where you see me kind of having to stand up and put this paper in and reach across onto the strings and still manage to reach the keyboard with my left hand. So it's a lot of fun to play. And it really, that comes across to the audience, I think, very, very effectively.
What have each of you learned about yourselves in working together on this recording?
Oh, I've learned that I'm really lucky to be playing with these great musicians. Of course, I grew up with my brother, but to be able to record with Michael so soon after meeting him for the first time is just a pleasure. It's really awesome when you get together and you perform, and you know people are great, but then to actually put it down and sit in a recording session for a few days and survive and come out with such a great product is pretty awesome.
And from my end, working with Anthony and Damare, I've played some music with each of them separately, and that is really kind of natural and easy and wonderful. But the thing that I found most amazing was how they interact and blend together so seamlessly. You can just tell there's that family history and that chemistry, and it's really quite amazing.
I've learned that we have a lot to look forward to. I can't wait to record the second album. In the future, I can't wait to do more touring. You know, I love what I do for a living, and when I can actually make music with amazing people that I really like and care about, that makes it even more special.
That's New Classical Tracks from American Public Media, with special thanks to Valerie Kaler for producing this episode. I'm Julie Amacher.